Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Mahamudra Class, Part 3.
This evening, I want to do two or three things. I think we can turn the speaker down a little bit. There's only one person back there right now. Pardon?
I can hear you.
Good. It's a little ironic. This is, in a certain sense, the central section or of Mahamudra, and it falls on this holiday, and I guess a lot of people had trouble negotiating in the traffic, or they decided that this class wasn't worth it. I don't know. Anyway, pardon? What did you say?
I said, let's not do a podcast.
And let's not do a podcast. No, we're going to do a podcast anyway. Yeah, that'll be very irritating. You have a wonderful sense of humor, Nava. Now everybody knows who to write to. Well, there are a couple of things I wanted to do. One, going to work from a very profound Mahamudra textbook called The More Than Complete Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And the reason, and then I want to go over the pointing out instructions, and then take up any questions and things you might find be important in your own practice. Now, in our last class, we talked about a couple of questions, nature of mind, nature of thought and perception, and nature of the relationship between mind and thought and perception, or thought and sensation. And what we came to see is that mind, in a certain sense, is the inquiry into the nature of mind is, in a certain sense, equivalent to asking, "What am I?" I mean, here I am. And as we've discussed before, the only thing we actually know about ourselves is that we're aware. Or at least we think that we are aware. I've always felt that Ambrose Bierce's send-up of Descartes was more accurate than Descartes. Descartes, you may recall, said, "Cogito ergo sum," I think, therefore I am. Ambrose Bierce's was, "Cogito, cogito, ergo cogito sum," which means, "I think that I think, therefore I think that I am." You get that? That's actually more accurate. But, so, we have this, "What am I?" And this awareness, what is it? And then we have, okay, what's all this stuff that we experience? And most of these questions, of course, take us right into the mystery of life, the mystery of being. And when we examined it, we saw that it's not possible to separate what we experience from the awareness that experiences it. The solution of subject-object duality in formal philosophical terms. We don't experience the world. We don't experience our lives like that. And there's a reason. It's because we have all of the stuff that gets in the way. So one of the ways to look at Mahamudra practice is that it's a way of letting go of all of the stuff that stops us from experiencing life and ourselves as they actually are. Now, what I want to do is to read a section from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy which describes what it might be like to live that way. How many of you are familiar with this book? Okay. Well, three people Zaphod, Zarniwoop, and Trillian have decided to visit the ruler of the universe. And here's what happens. A 100 yards away, pelted by the torrential rain, lay the Heart of Gold, which is the name of Zaphod's spaceship. Its hatchway opened and three figures emerged, huddling into themselves to keep the rain off their faces. "In there?" shouted Trillian above the noise of the rain. "Yes," said Zarniwoop. "That shack?" "Yes." "Weird," said Zaphod. "But it's in the middle of nowhere," said Trillian. "We must have come to the wrong place. You can't rule the universe from a shack." They hurried through the pouring rain and arrived, wet through, at the door. They knocked, they shivered, the door opened. "Hello," said the man.
"Excuse me," said Zarniwoop, "I have reason to believe..." "Do you rule the universe?" said Zaphod.
The man smiled at him. "I try not to," he said. "Are you wet?" Zaphod looked at him in astonishment. "Wet?" he cried. "Does it look to as if it were wet?"
"That's how it looks to me," said the man. "But how you feel about it might be an altogether different matter. If you find warmth makes you dry, you'd better come in."
They went in. They looked around the tiny shack. Zarniwoop with slight distaste, Trillian with interest, Zaphod with delight.
"Hey," said Zaphod, "what's your name?"
The man looked at them doubtfully.
"I don't know. Why do you think I should have one? It seems very odd to give a bundle of vague sensory perceptions a name."
He invited Trillian to sit in the chair. He sat on the edge of the chair. Zarniwoop leaned stiffly against the table, and Zaphod lay on the mattress.
"Wow-wee," said Zaphod. "The seat of power." He tickled the cat.
"Listen," said Zarniwoop, "I must ask you some questions."
"All right," said the man kindly. "You can sing to my cat if you like."
"Would he like that?" asked Zaphod.
"You'd better ask him," said the man.
"Does he talk?" said Zaphod.
"I have no memory of him talking," said the man, "but I am very unreliable."
Zarniwoop pulled some notes out of a pocket. "Now," he said, "you do rule the universe, do you?"
"How can I tell?" said the man.
Zarniwoop ticked off a note on the paper. "How long have you been doing this?"
"Ah," said the man, "this is a question about the past, is it?"
Zarniwoop looked at him in puzzlement. This wasn't exactly what he had been expecting.
"Yes," he said. "How can I tell," said the man, "that the past isn't a fiction designed to account for the discrepancy between my immediate physical sensations and my state of mind?"
Zarniwoop stared at him. The steam began to rise from his sodden cloths.
"So you answer all questions like this?" he said.
The man answered quickly. "I say what it occurs to me to say when I think I hear people say things." "More I cannot say."
Zaphod laughed happily. "I'll drink to that," he said, and pulled out the bottle of Jack and Spirit. He leaped up, handed the bottle to the ruler of the universe, who took it with pleasure. "Good on you, great ruler," he said. "Tell it like it is."
"No, listen to me," said Zarniwoop. "People come to you, do they, in ships?"
"I think so," said the man. He handled the bottle to Trillian.
"And they ask you," said Zarniwoop, "to make decisions for them, about people's lives, about worlds, about economies, about wars, about everything going on out there in the universe."
"Out there?" said the man.
Out where? Out there, said Czarny, pointing at the door. How can you tell there's anything out there? Said the man politely. The door's closed. The rain continued to pound the roof. Inside the shack it was warm. But you know there's a whole universe out there, cried Zarniwoop. You can't dodge your responsibilities by saying they don't exist. The ruler of the universe thought for a long while Zarniwoop quivered with anger. You're very sure of your facts, he said at last. I couldn't trust the thinking of a man who takes the universe, if there is one, for granted. Zarniwoop still quivered, but was silent. I only decide about my universe, continued the man quietly. My universe is my eyes and my ears. Anything else is hearsay. But don't you believe in anything? The man shrugged, picked up his cap. I don't understand what you mean, he said. You don't understand that what you decide in this shack of yours affects the lives and fates of millions of people? This is all monstrously wrong. I don't know. I've never met all these people you speak of, and neither, I suspect, have you. They only exist in words we hear. It is folly to say you know what is happening to other people. Only they know, if they exist. They have their own universes of their eyes and ears. Trillian said, I think I'm popping out for a moment. She left and walked into the rain. Do you believe other people exist? Insisted Zarniwoop. I have no opinion. How can I say? I'd better see what's up with Trillian, said Zaphod, and slipped out. Outside he said to her, I think the universe is in pretty good hands, yeah? Very good, said Trillian. They walked off into the rain. Inside, Zarniwoop continued, But don't you understand that people live or die on your word? The ruler of the universe waited for as long as he could. When he heard the faint sound of the ship's engine starting, he spoke to cover it. It's nothing to do with me, he said. I'm not involved with people. The Lord knows I'm not a cruel man. Ah, barked Zarniwoop, you say, the Lord, you believe in something. My cat, said the man benignly, picking it up and stroking it. I call him the Lord. I am kind to him. All right, said Zarniwoop, pressing home to his point. How do you know he exists? How do you know he knows you to be kind, or enjoys what he thinks of you of as your kindness? I don't, said the man with a smile. I have no idea. It merely pleases me to behave in a certain way to what appears to be a cat. Do you behave any differently? Please, I think I am tired. Zarniwoop heaved a thoroughly dissatisfied sigh and looked about. Where are the other two? He said suddenly. What other two? Says the ruler of the universe, settling back into his chair and refilling his whiskey glass. Beeblebrox and the girl, the two who were here. I remember no one. The past is a fiction to account. Stuff it, said Snap Zarniwoop and ran out into the rain. There was no ship. The rain continued to churn the mud. There was no sign to show where the ship had been. He hollered into the rain. He turned and ran back to the shack and found it locked. The ruler of the universe dozed lightly in his chair. After a while, he played with the pencil and the paper again, and was delighted when he discovered how to make a mark with the one on the other. Various noises continued outside, but he didn't know whether they were real or not. He then talked to his table for a week to see how it would react. Now, it's obviously humor, but what about living? Actually living? In the only world that you actually can know, which is everything you experience, think, and feel. That's the only world you can actually know. And as the ruler of the universe says in here, everything else is hearsay. Okay. So what would it be like to live? How would you do that? And what would you need to be able to live and navigate that world? Now, This is the world that Buddhism talks about and teaches us how to be present in and how to be awake in. It's not the world of shared experience, not the world that has been constructed, because that world is a fiction. It's a construct. And, or another way of putting it, it's a dream. All that we can know is what we think and feel and sense. And some of you have heard me use this other example from Uchiyama, which I rather like. And I may have mentioned this class already, if so, please forgive me. But you scientists were studying the duck, trying to figure out when it turned its eggs, or how it knew when to turn the eggs over. Because periodically it would just get up and turn all the eggs over. And so they were evenly warmed and hatched properly. Figured there must be some kind of timing mechanism or whatever. But after doing some very careful study of it, they came to the conclusion that the duck got up and turned the eggs over when she got too hot. Then it was time to turn the eggs over. Now, I love this example because it shows how by being really, really present with our own experience, the result is, and balancing and working in our world to correct imbalances, we actually create the conditions for balance to form in the larger world around us. And to me, this is the essence of, if you want, call it Buddhist ethics. It's not about orchestrating great changes in the world, but by being acutely and intimately connected with the world of our own experience, then balance, clarity, effectiveness naturally manifest. They arise quite naturally in that, and that ripples out from us. We find the same thing in Taoism, expressed in very different language, but along the lines of the perfected man or the perfected person leaves no footprints. He does nothing but wonderful things happen around him. So we're talking about the same kind of thing. And I'd like you just to reflect, okay, what would it take for you to be able to be that aware of what you're experiencing? That's one thing. And also, what would it take to pour your energy into living in the actual world you experience and not being distracted by the dream, by the projection, by the construction all the time? Now, another theme that we picked up last week, or started in last week, was these three qualities that enable us to do things: willingness, know-how, and capacity. And, well, I don't think maybe 100% capacity. I think this business of capacity is far more important than is usually reckoned. I mean, particularly in this culture, we all want a magic bullet. We want to just be able to do things immediately. And because of that, we often don't place much value on the accumulation of ability and experience, which in many ways can't be speeded up. As I was saying, the one way to regard practice is creating the conditions for attention, really, to grow. And just letting that happen. Now, there are a lot of things we can do to create the conditions. One is setting up our lives so that there is opportunity and practice on a regular basis. Another is developing a deep level of intention. That's a very important condition. And in terms of building capacity, we can not only just rest with the breath or rest in awareness, but we can also use such practices as loving kindness, as it's used in the Theravadan tradition, or bodhicitta, compassion in the Mahayana tradition, or devotion in the Vajrayana tradition. And we use those specific emotions as a way of transforming emotional energy into attention and uncovering awareness. And those are very, very powerful methods. So there are a lot of things that we can do to create conditions. But much of it has to do with building capacity rather than trying to understand things. I think that the two most important areas initially in practice to put energy is into the area of willingness and into the area of building capacity. What's important in willingness this is something I've discussed quite deeply with a few of my colleagues and friends. And we tend to think that the willingness to be awake is natural. And that's actually captured in the Buddhist notion of Buddha nature. It's the intention to awake. That's one way of describing it. And it's the natural proclivity of awareness is to want to be awake. And that's very loose language and probably could be taken to task for it, but I think you get what I mean. So that means, well, what is unwillingness? And from this perspective, there isn't anything such called unwillingness. There is simply the momentum or the inertia, as the case may be, of habituated patterns, which we experience as unwillingness. But it's simply it's the experience that is encountered as that willingness tries to engage waking up. So there isn't a thing to overcome. It's more being in the experience of whatever is arising. That's what we're going to focus on this evening, is moving, how to recognize and how to be completely in the experience of what is and what is arising. Now, as I was preparing for this evening, I realized that in the time frame that we're working, this is going to be very, very quick. It's almost, I hope that I can work with you and so that something arises. It's the upstairs neighbor's car. Oh, thank you. And that I also realized that the ideal conditions for this is a retreat condition. So I want to put this on everybody's plate this evening. In 2008, I've reserved a very large block of time at the at a retreat center we've been using for the last couple of years. It's a wonderful place out right at the edge of the plains in New Mexico. So it's very, very spacious. And it's basically from the middle of July to the end of August, so it's a month and a half. And I'm planning to do two retreats in that period of time. One is a 10-day retreat and one is a 3-week retreat. One of those retreats, I've decided, as I was preparing for this, is going to be on Mahamudra, probably the 10-day retreat, but I'm not sure. But it is that it'll be a way, it'll be an opportunity to practice where there's creating trying to pull all of the conditions together so you can actually move into this experience and know it, which is a crucial step, because once you know the experience, then you have something to work with in your life. So I know that many people have to plan vacations far in advance and so forth, so I just want to put that out. You're getting first word, but I'm going to put it out to a number of people. There are only 20 places available in the retreat. It's a small retreat center. And it's not up on the website. You won't be able to register on it until late next year. But it's. I just want to let you know that that's something that I'm looking for that far in advance. And so it's something to work towards. So this evening, let's turn to the pages. Actually, I don't want you to read. Let me do this. Because what I want you to do is to work with this in your own experience. Now, in Tibetan Buddhism, we have this set of instructions called the pointing out instructions. And they're kind of neat. What they are is what is actually a fairly intimate relationship between teacher and student, in which teacher and student work together, and under the guidance of the teacher, the student's guided into very specific experiences. And the teacher said, okay, that's that experience, and that's that, and that's that. So it's like, you know, if you're learning about rocks, I'm just using that as an example, you know, you go on a field expedition with a really good geologist, you say, he'll pick up and say, okay, this is basalt. You know, this is what it looks like. It's hexagonal, it's black, it's got this density, etc. This is granite, and you can tell it by its specs and things like that. And this is mica and so forth. Well, it's basically the equivalent. You know, when you get that first-hand knowledge, okay, now you know what mica looks like. You know what quartz looks like. You know what basalt looks like. And that's the purpose of the pointing out instructions. So you know, well, this is this, and this is that, and that's whatever, and so forth. So we're going to do what we can this evening, and we'll just see how it goes, okay? So if you sit for meditation, let your body rest and settle naturally in attention. Let your breath settle naturally. And just let your mind settle naturally. Don't think about the past. Don't entertain the future. Don't dwell on the present. Just rest. Okay. Now, we did this last time, the time before. There's a shift that takes place. Can we hand the microphones at this point? So, Linnea, what did you experience?
An awareness of clarity up here, but tension in my body.
Yeah. Well, there's a moment of just clear awareness. Okay. John, what did you experience?
I went right to that place.
Okay.
I wasn't in the past, future.
Okay. So there's a shift and you just open. How would you describe it?
Relaxation. Mm-hmm. First, there's.
What happened to thinking?
The thinking sort of just dissipates.
Okay. So you hear what's being described. Okay. That's shamatha. That's resting. That's the resting mind. That's the pointing out for resting mind. Okay. It's actually quite natural. We're just doing this for very short periods of time. There's no big mystery to it. That's important. There's no big mystery. Now, the difficulty for many is it's fine for 1, 2, 5 seconds. After that, other things start to happen. This is not a question of understanding. This is purely a question of capacity. And so that's what you cultivate, is more capacity. So you can just rest. And we even go a bit further here, because thoughts can come and go, and the quality of resting is not disturbed. Some of you know that experience. Okay. That's still shamatha. And eventually you reach the point that there can be huge emotional upheavals, and there's the quality of resting isn't disturbed. That resting quality, that's shamatha, that's a Sanskrit word, that is the resting mind. Okay, so we go back to meditation. Now there are things that, before finish, what can happen with shamatha? Shamatha has, or this resting mind has two qualities to it. One is stability, and one is clarity. And in the resting mind, just as you're experiencing now, it is stable and clear. Everybody with me in that? Okay. Now, what can happen is the stability is lost. Reactive patterns create disturbances. So that's where you start thinking. That's the loss of stability. And then you just go off. The other thing that can happen is you lose the clarity. Reactive patterns create generate dullness or dulling of the attention. And when I talk about capacity, it is building the capacity so that you aren't falling into busyness or dullness. And if you look at chapter 3 and Wake Up to Your Life, you'll find a whole bunch of techniques about that. But basically, and this is a very, very important as a part of this kind of practice. In Mahamudra practice, the best way is when it disintegrates into dullness or disintegrates into busyness, is just stop and start again. It falls off, you stop, relax, and start again. And doing this over and over again, you gradually extend your, or build your capacity to rest in that open clarity, that shamatha. Okay? Any questions before we go on? Yes, Susan.
You said in Mahamudra
practice
we do this, so is that different from shamatha?
Well, no, it's different from other forms of... some other forms of shamatha, where you'll actually use remedies to balance the mind state. Mahamudra, what I'm suggesting here is just stop, start again.
Okay, so you're saying that both things, those experiences can happen in both shamatha and Mahamudra.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we're applying Mahamudra.
Well,
techniques to both.
Yeah, I'm going to give you instruction within the Mahamudra context. Shamatha is a very, very general term. What I was pointing out there was the Mahamudra form of shamatha, okay, which is not using any object. You're not resting on a. The attention isn't resting on an object. It's just resting, and you experience that shift into clear, stable resting. You with me? Okay. So go back, sit again, let your body, breath, settle. And again, let go of the past, the future, and the present. Now, in that clear, stable attention, look to see what is mind. What is the mind that rests? What is it? And when you look this way, you probably experience a shift in attention, shift in the energy of attention, so things become brighter and clearer. And in that looking, you find yourself looking at absolutely nothing. Yet, there continues to be an awareness. It's not like you are out cold or anything. So there's this awareness, which is and sees nothing. Okay, that's insight. First, insight. First we had resting, shamatha. Now we have insight. Sanskrit word for that is vipassana. Now, a lot of people will say, or the opinion that Vipassana or insight practice means you're asking these questions, you know, what is mind, what's the color of mind, what's the shape of mind, etc. You know, where is the mind, all of that stuff. But though that actually isn't, from this perspective, that actually isn't insight. That's what you engage in order to precipitate the experience of insight. The actual experience of insight is this clear awareness which simultaneously apprehends and is no thing. Now, what did you experience with this? Mike's around. Nava.
When I look for mind, I don't see anything, but I feel it here. So I kind of look for that, and I know it. I continue from there. It's, I see it as a perception, so I keep looking there. That's what happened.
Okay. Next time you try it, you look at mind. As you say, you see no thing. But you also have a sensation.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Rest in the looking. Don't do anything with the sensation. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because now you, when you start looking and looking and looking, it's like a dog chasing its own tail.
Uh-huh.
You spin until you mm-hmm. fall down in fatigue. So try that next time, okay? Anybody else? Lisa.
After the shift, and while I'm looking, the sensation shifts to my heart. It just seems very warm and open.
Mm-hmm.
And flushed.
Right.
So and it's almost like being carried away by the sensation.
Ah. And what if you look at the awareness?
Then there's both.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not dissimilar from Nava. That when you experience that shift, there are sensations which arise. And whereas hers arises here, yours arises here, and there's a shift in feeling there. And what happens time and time again with us is that we get grabbed by the content of experience. It's a bit like trying to know the ocean by taking hold of a wave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, the wave is the ocean, but if you try to take hold of the wave, you kind of miss it.
And there's a real strong preference that arises for that feeling of warmth. And
yes, that's right.
And then the clinging.
Yes, that's usually what comes next. Okay, Raquel.
Before you asked the question, and I was sitting there resting in attention, I felt more sensations. But then when you asked the question, and it was, I guess you might call it a second shift, then it felt. The sensations, I wasn't aware of those same sensations, and it was just felt more open and a little
airy. So this raises another point. In this process, by the way that we're working, we're shifting energies, shifting levels of energy, and higher and higher. So when we just say, let go of the past, future, and present, there's a shift. And there we are in that clear, stable attention. And then look at the awareness that is present there. There's another shift. Now, every time we shift energy, things that would have distracted us at one level cease to distract us. It doesn't, isn't that they go away. It's now that the energy is transformed into a higher level. And so it's not disturbed by those sensations in the same way. So this is very good. Now, the challenge here is to learn, and to learn is, again, I'm going to emphasize this point, pound this one, is not a case of understanding. It's a case of developing ability or capacity so that you can rest in those higher level energies. You follow, Raquel? Okay. And that's something you develop by practicing. There's nothing you can do to, no amount of understanding will actually help you do it. You just have to keep practicing and actually develop that ability. If you wish, it's a bit like working out at the gym, you know. You can understand exactly how to move a certain machine. What does that do for the muscles in your arm? Well, nothing. You got to sit down and push, and then you build up actual strength. And here you're building up a capacity for attention, and things become possible in the way that we were talking about last week, when you develop that capacity, and they remain very difficult, very unstable, and if at all accessible, when you haven't got that capacity. And I see so many people struggle with their practice because they try to understand how to do things when all they actually need is to develop capacity. And then they will find that the knowing, which is really what they're seeking, will arise, not all the time, but very, very often quite naturally, whereas that knowing is almost inaccessible through just understanding. Okay? Linnea.
Ultimately, what's the difference between the awareness and the... And the there's clarity.
Yes.
Okay. And then, which is clarity, yet other things going on.
Okay.
Okay. In the end, I don't know what the difference is between the awareness and the actual experience.
Is that something you don't know or don't understand?
Don't understand.
Yes, well, we're not concerned with understanding. But you see, you're trying to figure it out, right?
I can't labor.
Yeah, but, I mean, I could give you a nice philosophical discourse on that one. You know, it wouldn't do you a scrap of good. Bear with us, maybe we'll get there this evening, okay? You know, just after you've taken such care to question, to phrase that question so carefully. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Could you hand the mic up, please?
What's the difference between the state after the... What's the difference between the state after those two shifts and doing one thing? Like doing dishes. Doing the dishes. That's that first example.
Well, it depends how you do the dishes, doesn't it?
If you do nothing else and think about nothing else and just do the dishes.
Yep, that's mixing attention with activity.
So what you're talking about has nothing to do with a physical activity?
No, we simply do it in meditation because it's a little easier to point to when it's unmixed with activity. But ideally, and something one works, is to learn how to do this, how to be and experience that world this way, while you're doing, carrying on a conversation, doing the dishes, whatever, cooking.
Like all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I missed what you recommended earlier, to rest not in the question but in rest in the awareness of finding when, there's nothing.
When we're going to be doing this again in just a moment, when you ask certain questions, you experience a shift in the level of attention, right? What many, many people do is once they experience that shift, they find themselves looking at nothing and they go, oh, there's nothing here, and they ask the question again and they ask the question again, and that's where you get like a dog spinning, chasing its own tail, and it's not helpful. Or they try to understand it, or they try to figure it out. Where what is actually needs to be done and is much more beneficial is when you ask the question, you experience the shift, you rest in that shift. So you're accustoming yourself and familiarizing yourself with being in that higher level of attention. Okay? All right. So let's return to meditation again. And again, let go of the past and the future and the present and just rest. Look at what you're actually experiencing right now. You're likely experiencing a natural knowing that cannot be described or conceptualized in any way. Now let that go for a moment and just ask, what is mind? And you find yourself resting in clear, stable attention. So, in one way, we've been approaching this through the resting mind. In the other way, we've been approaching it through the aware mind, or the looking mind, the insight. is there a difference between the mind and insight and the mind that is resting? This is the union of seeing and resting, or in traditional terms, Vipassana and Shamatha. That's what I'm pointing to right now. Okay, your experience here. Valerie, let's start with you. Microphone here, Victor.
Well, what was happening for me was that I was shifting back and forth between relaxing and looking, and I don't know, it's just a it's like a shift in energy between the two.
Mm. Okay.
Maybe one brighter and one softer.
Well, let's go a little further then. So you have the resting mind and the seeing mind. Which do you want to start with?
The seeing mind.
Okay, so bring up the seeing mind. Which means look at my nature, look at what mind is, and rest there. Okay. Now, just let the mind rest and look at what's there. Okay. Same or different?
It's the same.
Thank you. Robin, your experience. Microphone's right there.
Well, I guess I want to say I'm appreciating this knowledge of these shifting things, because I feel that I've experienced this but haven't had the shared experience with anybody else, put in those terms. So, but then there's sort of like a in-between place, kind of in neither here nor there, and then a little bit of backing out of that to try to take the question or think to use the to understand the words to apply the question, kind of.
There's a panic attack.
I don't know. And then going back.
What are you backing away from?
Huh?
What are you backing away from?
Oh, that could be like a... There could be an edge that...
You know what you do when you get to that edge?
Yeah, you know, if you ever come back when you go there or not.
No, if you get to that edge, you know what to do? Do you?
Oh, do I know what to do if I get to the edge?
Yes.
Not yet.
Jump.
There's a little, probably, I guess a little thought, you know, pulls some attention.
That's right,
back,
yeah.
Something like that.
But when you come to an edge, jump.
Oh.
I'm very enthusiastic about
you
that.
Were,
you know what I mean.
Okay.
Okay. Darren.
What exactly is the question?
What was your experience?
When I'm resting, there's a certain dimensional experience, and then when we become aware of awareness, it's almost like things become more vivid, and I'm sort of looking inward and outward at the same time. It's the clarity and the vividness, it just gets magnified. And then sometimes there's a voice that just starts answering that question, what is mind? And I just sit back and listen to what it says, or ignore it.
You're seduced too, just like Odysseus and the sirens.
And I think there's a little bit of, I can understand Robin's feeling, like there's almost a little bit of part of me that feels a tiny bit of panic.
Yeah.
In the sense that the guy in the story from the Celtics fairy tale, like, he sailed away, and it was from the point of view of that he's gone. There's almost like this sense of, you know, some ego part of me.
How many of you are experiencing that panic? Good. Same instruction I gave Robin. You're going to experience that panic over and over again. What is that panic?
Death of the ego.
Yeah. It's not the death of the ego. I don't like to use the term ego anyway, because I think it's very misleading.
The death of the constructs.
Well, I wish it were the... I wish it were the death. Unfortunately, it's not the death. Fear is the mechanism of last resort that a pattern generates to dissipate attention. Yes.
I was just saying that it can work pretty well. In particular, like a panic attack will take you right out.
Yeah, that's right. Now, what do you do?
Well, stay in that experience.
Yeah. And what do you need to do that? Somebody's getting the point. Capacity. Yeah, understanding does not help here. You have to build the capacity to be able to experience that movement of mind just as a movement.
And actually in a Tuesday night meeting we had, I had a panic attack, and I had all the people around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, raise my hand, by the way,
yes,
having a panic attack, and with all of those people helping in some way, that helped my ability to...
Yes, you're able to, they're able to support you and could mix the attention so that you could work at a higher level than you ordinarily are able to by yourself individually, and thus you could actually experience it and stay in the experience rather than be thrown off.
And it absolutely helped quite a bit.
That's one of the reasons, one of the great benefits of group practice, and I'm very glad you had that experience. That's very good. And it's very good that people were able to support you that way. And
they're very helpful.
Yeah. And because when we practice together, we make a soup or a field of attention which everybody contributes and everybody can draw from. Or utilize, and so it enables us to make greater efforts because there's more capacity there. See, I'm going to pound this nail home. Then we may be able to experience individually or generate individually. We can't rely on that, but it does open possibilities for us because we don't always have other people around. Okay, very good. Now, let's go a little further. So, come back to the union of the resting and seeing mind. Okay, so whether you come from the resting mind into the seeing mind, and the two together, or vice versa, it doesn't make any difference. Now, where does this clear, empty knowing come from? Where is it right now? Does it ever go? And if so, where? Okay. This clear, empty knowing is what you are. It doesn't come from anywhere. It is what you are. It doesn't exist in any place. It is what you are. And it actually doesn't go anywhere. Because it is what you are. This clear, empty knowing is what you are. Okay. And your experience with this, Susan?
Starting with the union of shamatha, vipassana, it was like, I don't want to say being aware of awareness, but there's a sense of there being different flavors, kind of. Each had a different quality. And then moving beyond that, just it's like the bottom dropped out, felt open, like there was
I was just there.
Yeah. George, and I'm listening to you very carefully. What was your experience?
It changed. It went first from space to even more expansion, but then it felt more like focusing without focusing on anything. And then it felt like within much more space.
I'm going to stop you there before you ruin it. That's good. Good. Molly. No, you don't go any further than that. That's good.
I was just right with really experiencing what Susan was talking about with the two different flavors and resting there. And I think I became a lot more aware of sort of everything around me at the same time, like in this room, and of those two qualities.
Okay, this is as far as we go tonight. This is very good. As it says on page 42, the meaning in a nutshell is this. Allow your mind to be as natural as it naturally is. Let thoughts dissolve in themselves. This is your innate mind, which is an unidentifiable, self-knowing, natural awareness. It says, remain one-pointedly in its continuity and do not get distracted. It's a clumsy translation, that. During the daily activities, try to keep this kind of mindfulness undistractedly as much as you can. I don't like the translation. I'm going to go back to the Tibetan. But I won't read it in Tibetan. When you let the mind rest, settle naturally, thinking releases itself, or is naturally released. Your experience, an innate or natural knowing which is intrinsically clear and not identifiable as anything. Don't be distracted. And do just this. In the course of the day, in everything that you do, remember it without distraction. Work on this very consistently for the next few days. So you all have a knowing. That's been the point of this this evening is pointing out. It's always there. Now, having had it pointed out, you can recognize it. And basically, keep recognizing it during your meditation, but also during the day. Just keep recognizing it. Don't try to hold on to it. That never works. Instead, recognize, rest. And then it'll dissipate or fade. Then recognize, rest. And so you begin to develop some you become conversant with it. And that's really the essence of this practice. Any questions? Molly?
Are there more than Vipassana and
Shamatha?
Shamatha?
Seeing and resting?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes and no. are there more aspects that can be pointed out?
Yeah, I'm just wondering because I feel like this is the first time I've felt those two as being distinct. And I'm just like, well, how many other ways can I see this thing? Are there 31 and I just don't know? I mean, I was just wondering if...
Well, you not only experience them as distinct, but you also experience them as the same.
As the same, yeah.
Yeah. no, you don't have to worry about there being too much more than that. But there is very much a case of developing capacity so that one can be there. And then actually applying, which is what much the next part is about, actually applying this to all aspects of experience. And these require progressively more powerful states of attention. So you can apply it to more and more aspects of experience. So we start off here. But this and it's fair to say this includes the essential matters. Okay? And, well, yeah, Steve, you have a mic somewhere other? Okay, one's coming back.
Thanks. Two questions, one very quick, but we're not talking about in it so far any union of this resting and seeing with compassion. And I know we don't. I'm not saying start that at 9:30, but I'm just, is Mahamudra in its encompass that union, and is that part of it, or is this? It's just an issue that's always been a little difficult for me anyway, and we're not touching on it, so...
What's he trying to do, Linnea?
Move away?
I'd say he's trying to understand.
Oh.
What do you recommend to him? What would you advise him?
Die to wanting to understand.
Yeah, that could be useful, but I was hoping you'd be a little more constructive than that. No, this is not very helpful instruction, the suggestions you're getting, Steve. Anybody got anything? Linnea?
Just rest.
No, come on. What you got, Linnea?
Sit in the discomfort?
I think we can go further. So, when you experience, I think we've got some feedback. Okay, yep, there it goes. When you experience seeing resting mind, what's your attitude to everything that you experience?
perceive an attitude in that moment. If there was, I would say acceptance.
Acceptance. Say a bit more.
There's no judgment in that.
So there's no judgment. What else? Let's put it this way.
Not as much separation, a lack of separation.
Lack of separation, okay. Suppose you're there, okay? And you see someone spinning out of control in anger. What arises in you?
Coming from somewhat of state of this, of
yeah, your mind is clear and present. You're clear
it's
and present.
Possible. I'll be angry that they messed up my my nice meditation.
Well, that one didn't work at all, did it? Seriously?
No. Trying to keep it from being too serious.
Well, the thing is, would your state of mind be disturbed? That natural, clear knowing.
I mean, if I could stay in that place.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Well, if it triggered reactions.
But no, just don't talk about this theoretically.
Oh, if you could stay in that.
No, don't talk about it theoretically. Check your own experience. Is that clear, stable union of seeing and resting disturbed by anything that arises in experience?
No.
No. So what would you feel if you saw someone spinning out of control in anger?
I imagine you would just it would just be an event like.
But what would you feel?
Feel.
Yes, that F word. You're thinking too much. Anybody?
Compassion.
Yeah.
I mean,
quite
I,
naturally.
Yes.
Yeah. It would just arise, wouldn't it?
Yes, a feeling of.
Yeah. Compassion would just arise.
Out of that clarity.
Yeah. Well, it is the clarity, actually, yeah. Compassion. Why? Because in that clear knowing, you know that anger is the result of hurt.
The
anger is the result of hurting. You know, you aren't caught up in the anger. Mm-hmm. You aren't disturbed by it. You see how things are. Mm-hmm. So compassion naturally arises.
What if the anger is going to hurt somebody? What if you see somebody who's out of control
and angry, and you see they're going to hit a kid.
Yeah.
You feel compassion?
I think we've been here before, Claire. Yes, I know that's how you feel. And I would say, yes, you do. You feel compassion for both parties.
You wouldn't want to stop the person?
I would imagine you would want to stop, and you probably would stop. But you don't have to be motivated by anger to stop.
Don't you do what needs to be done?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're making the assumption that you would have to be motivated by anger to do that. You don't.
No.
No. You can be motivated by compassion.
Yeah.
For both. that it may affect how you try to stop.
Well, the compassion is the appropriate action, is it not?
Depends what arises in the circumstance, but one would hope, yeah. It's certainly more likely to be the appropriate action than anger. There's a very good Tai Chi person. Somebody Liu, I can't remember his first name now. And he trained for many, many years in Tai Chi. Which is a difficult martial art, and you have to train a very long time before you're really effective. And he was on a subway in New York, and there was a drunk on the subway who was hassling a young woman, and thought, oh, I'll put him in his place. And he's just preparing to. When this very small, very short Oriental man stepped in front of him and walked up to the drunk and quietly engaged the drunk in a conversation, the result of which is that the attention of the drunk was turned away from the young woman. And he became completely absorbed in the conversation with this very short, slim man. And the Tai Chi guy said, this was a real learning experience for him. Just, oh, different ways. Okay. Compassion. Useful thing, sometimes. Okay, any other questions before we close? Baron.
So as I was practicing this instruction from last week about expanding our senses,
or yep.
going through our senses, which was great because it's portable.
You don't need a lot of machinery.
It's really helpful. I don't have to be in my cushion at home. But anyway, one thing I noticed was I could hear all the things that my brain and my senses automatically filtered out, which is better for our construct of life. You know, then I opened up to that, and the field of focus opened up, and then there were all these unwelcome things. Like I realize I have my little bit of ringing in my ears.
Everybody does.
So now it's that's there, and I could realize that in the outdoor fresh air, I could actually smell the smog, and you know. You know where I'm getting at with this, but there's all these things that we actually.
Everybody thinks
it's helpful to close in on.
Everybody thinks awareness and being aware is groovy, but it's not.
But my question is, should I do that as a practice and then go back to the state? I mean, am I supposed to always be experiencing the ringing of my ears? I mean, I'm not really joking around. I mean, I'm actually being serious about it, you know. Is the goal to live with the ringing of the ears, or is it to experience that as a practice?
Why are you practicing? Why are you here?
To become awake.
Well, that's your answer then, isn't it? I'm not making you do this. You're here out of your own volition.
So your answer is yes, they should.
No, it's not.
Well, I mean,
you want to be awake.
If I would like to become awake, then I should get used to
being awake. You know, when you're totally aware, you don't get to choose what you're aware of. You learn how to live in that world. Your choice. But that's why you're here. That's why you're here. I'm not making you do a damn thing, so don't put it on me. People love to project that way, but it's just not...
I wasn't.
Yes, you were. Are you saying that the goal should be, is... Are you? No.
You're just asking for instruction.
Yes, well, but you have it already, and you're giving it to yourself. I can tell you how. You decide what you actually do. Okay?
Smog doesn't smell that bad.
Okay, let's close here for the evening. Molly?
Retains all rights to these podcasts. If you do wish to use a part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.